Hello and welcome to episode number 58 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Live at the time, as they say, from Big Ten Media Days in Chicago at the Chicago Hilton and Towers along Michigan Avenue in the greatest city in the country.
I'm just fascinated. Scott just shared with me the nugget that the fugitive scene where he comes in to challenge the guy on who worked for Devlin McGregor and was changing the samples was in this.
You switched the samples.
Yes.
Yeah, so Harrison Ford.
He came through those doors back there and then walked toward up there.
Yeah, and confronted the evil doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And also exonerated himself at the same time. So
I did not kill my wife.
Yeah, so yeah, for once and for all, could you address the accusations made against you, sir?
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, obviously the football season is a little more than a month away, and this is always the summer mile marker of camp is around the corner, and then we will be playing football, and it's 2026, and we are in the heyday of Illinois football, and Light the Eye here in our seventh month or so. We are on the road once again.
Yep.
We were on the road in Nashville for a bowl game for the first time. We were semi on the road a few episodes ago when you made your famous long jump. And now, this is perhaps the most buttoned up road trip for you.
Buttoned up quite literally.
Look at you, even in a long sleeve shirt.
Sweating in a long sleeve shirt, I should add.
Yes. The order of the day is to talk to the people who have made the trip for Illinois football. Secondary players Matthew Bailey and Juice Clark. It almost sounds like I made them sound like not important. You know, these are the secondary players.
No.
They are very important. They
defensive
play,
backs.
They play that in the secondary.
Yes.
And quarterback Caton Hauser. We will have conversations with them. And then Brett Bielema, head coach, and athletic director Josh Whitman. And obviously we're recording these not all at once here together. That throughout the day as our schedule allows. And we'll piece it together here for the whole episode.
You know, I think this is the first time on a Light the Eye episode that I'm not wearing Illini gear. It has to be, right? It has to be.
Probably history.
Yep. History has been made. You just don't want to be the guy with all of this going around wearing the team colors with a lanyard around your neck. Even though it says Light the Eye and we've got Illini everything everywhere. Just don't be the guy in the bright orange shirt.
Yeah. you are credentialed.
Yes. Officially.
So that's fine.
Yep.
You know, I just before we get into all this, I just want to also give a shout out to this place. Had a little bit of history to it. Not only the fugitive as you mentioned, but we started our first episode or two, we referenced music. Music has come up a time or two. This is music's important in my life.
It might have been your major.
Yeah. Well, this very hotel and this here very ballroom has hosted an annual band and orchestra clinic every year. It happens in December. If you're in the band orchestra world, it's the who's who and from junior high school educators up through college and professionals. It's where they come to, and so I had my high school band in 1997 performed in here in this ballroom, and so it's just interesting to me how things come full circle.
How nervous were you for that performance?
I was pretty nervous actually,
yeah,
because I just had an awareness of a lot of who's who was in the audience.
Did you have any solos, any type of anything going on during the performance?
I believe so, but I don't remember specifically. But I believe so. But somewhere there's a CD sitting in a box in our house.
I was just impressed that you could find it on the internet of who performed here in 1997.
It's amazing what they can do on the internet these days.
That's right. That's right.
Any other broad takes here or sweeps or moments here before we get into it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the interviews are going to be everything to this episode. I do have one thing to say, and I want to just bring up our sponsor. Like, we're here because, let's just be honest, we're here because we partnered with U of I Credit Union. Like, this is their support of us allows us to do these type of things. It's why they wanted to get involved. They care about Illini Athletics like I care about Illini Athletics. And I'm just so thankful that we can be here and we can have this equipment and we can do these things and we can sit down. And it's because of them. And I want to make sure everybody knows that, that they are a great partner for us that in agreeing to be our featured sponsor, our, you know, our presenting sponsor. So before we go into anything else, all of this is because of their partnership with us.
All right. Let's hear from the players and the coaches and the athletic directors. Here we go, episode number 58 of Light the Eye. Before we do that, Robert, well...
Yeah, there isn't one.
You just want to hold this up.
Do we have a flashlight? We could, yeah. Here, yes. And...
Football Media Days, and we are pleased to have two of the three Illini players that are representing Illinois here in Chicago, Matthew Bailey and Juice Clark. Juice, it's also on the roster now as Juice. No yeah. longer just a nickname if it's officially on the roster as your first name.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Last year the roster still said Jaheim, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Did you lobby for that? You can go ahead and bring that microphone up to you. Did you lobby for that, or you just say, hey, just make it Juice, or did they come to, how did that work?
The media team came to me and asked me, do you want your name to be Juice on all the platforms? And I was like, yeah, why not? Because no one really called me by my first name, so... When they said that, I was like, yeah, just make it Juice on everything.
Where does Juice come from? Like, what's the history, what's the origin of people calling you Juice?
It came from one of my high school friends. We was in high school one day, my ninth grade year, and it was after practice. And I think he knew my uncle, and he was saying, like, I look like my uncle and stuff, because they used to, like, party together and stuff. I don't know why he's partying with my uncle.
Uh-huh.
But he was like, y'all, you look alike. And he was like, it's hard to pronounce my first name, so he was like, I'm just gonna call you Lil Juice. And then next week, like, everybody in school was calling me Lil Juice. The teachers was calling me Lil Juice. You know, some teachers still call my name, but then it just stick, and then from my sophomore year on, it just,
what about everybody your family? Did your mom Juice. Call you Juice?
Well, my dad called me Juice Tone. That's what my Instagram was before.
Okay, yeah.
Before, but now he called me Juice. He'd be like, he called me, because he's Jamaican, so he'd be like, yo, Juice,
okay.
When he called the phone. Uh-huh. And then yeah. My mom, she called me Juice, too.
Excellent.
Yes, sir.
So it's just, you need to get on your driver's license soon. It's just, toss Jaheim in the trash and just Juice the rest of the time.
I don't think I'm going to toss my first name in the trash. I like my first name on, like, my IDs and stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm an Illinois ID, like my student ID. It uh-huh. says Juice under, so.
That's great.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's great. And for whatever reason, I think orange juice. I don't know if it's because you play at Illinois. I don't know if it's because you're from Florida.
Yes, sir.
But I've got orange. Is there an orange associated with the Juice in your mind?
I smell
an
NIL.
Is it just energy? Yeah. Is there a specific juice that goes with it?
I really
this?
Like apple juice, but orange juice is fine because I'm from Florida and there's a lot of orange trees in Florida. So,
I remember the first time I heard that cherry juice was good for recovery. This was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I was talking to a catcher who... you know, is squatting all the time and needed help recovering the legs so he could be playing day for day in baseball.
Yeah.
Now it's like they're handing out. Do you guys take the cherry juices all the time for recovery?
Yeah. Before games, they give us some options. And so if we want to.
Yeah. It's supposed to be good for anti-inflammation.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
But I don't think cherry juice and is what you're going for.
No.
I'm an anti-inflammatory.
That's right.
My mom has some in the fridge. She was like, it's good for recovery. And I was like, Mom, I'm not drinking that.
It is dark. Well, for both of you, congratulations. It's always a badge of honor to be named one of the representatives for the National Media Days because it means, A, you play well, and B, you speak well. And so I'm just curious when you were asked, I'll start with you, Matthew, when you were asked to represent, what was the feeling?
Ooh, it was something of honor, for sure, like you said. It's something like a goal for me, being able to come here since my freshman year, seeing the guys during that time come and speak. And so it was awesome hearing Coach B. I think it was on the phone we were talking. It was during some off time. So he had asked me, and obviously I'm super excited. So I jumped on it and said, yeah, of course, I'm course I'm willing to go. And then from there, it was just getting ready, getting prepared.
Juice, what was the feeling for you?
I agree with Matt. It was definitely an honor. Just seeing the people that was in front of me in like the past, like come here and represent the team. It was always something that I wanted to do when I got here. And out of the blue, I was coming back from training in Florida on like the break, like Matt said, and Coach B had gave me a call. I'm like, Coach B calling me at this random time? I'm on break, Coach. So I answered the phone and he was like, they picked me to go to a Big Ten Media Day to represent our team. And then at first I was like, what? And then I asked him again and he was like, they picked me. So I was like, it was a badge of honor. And yeah, I was excited. And then I just started smiling. And then he hanged up the phone, so I called my dad right away. And my dad was pumped, and then my mom was pumped. So at that time, my dad was like, oh, you need a good suit. So then I know like what tie I was gonna wear, because we have the same tie. So
your dad has that same tie?
Yes, sir.
Well, can we see it a little bit? Try it. So you got the old Illinois logos there.
Yes, sir. It just shows like all the accomplishment from the school, like all the sports. You see the little trophy in the background, and
I want it. Like I'm ready to, I'm ready to make an offer on it.
Yeah, there could be an NIL deal there for you. It's one of a kind. Obviously, one of the biggest storylines coming into this season for you guys and for this football team is a new defensive coordinator and a new defense.
Yes.
So now that you've had since the new year, basically with Bobby Hauck and this defense, first of all, Matthew, what are your impressions of Bobby Hauck? Maybe what your first impressions were and how you see him now?
Yeah, I mean, my first impressions were, I was excited. I think that transition is always cool because you get to meet a lot of new people. And just being able to meet him and experience like his the way he builds relationships, that was pretty awesome. And meeting him and meeting all the rest of the coaches was awesome. But the way he's been able to build these guys up and bring the new, I don't know, mentality of the team together and have an effort and just, I don't know, being a team of excellence is something that he's really good at. I think he's just really great at building relationships, and so obviously as a coach he's awesome, but that's something super special that you don't always get.
Juice?
I love Coach Hauck. I mean, he's definitely a great guy. He brings the light to the room. Every time he come in there, he has so much energy, and he remind me of Coach Parker a little bit, the corner coach. But Coach Hauck is super, super geeked, ready. He come inside, like, you know you're gonna have a great practice because Coach Hauck is like bringing so much energy. But I love what Coach Hauck is bringing. When I first met Coach Hauck, I was excited. We always excited, and yeah, we just ready to meet him and get the work, to be honest.
Going into camp here, it's kind of been discussed over the summer that the secondary, a lot of you guys know each other, have played next to each other. It's a new defense, but you all have a familiarity with each other. And in front of you, the linebackers and linemen are going to be different and maybe guys in different roles. Do you feel like, I'll start with you, Matt, do you feel like the secondary is kind of like, hey, we're the experienced guys, we're the leadership on this defense? Like, how are you approaching this this thing?
Yeah, 100%. I think since we've all played together and we've been here for a while, I think that we all have those relationships to kind of spread the word when things need to be talked about or I don't know, the leadership aspect that you had talked about. I think that that's something that we've kind of taken on. I think X is in that, me and Juice. And so obviously that there are other players like James Crutes and Ish Conte who have stepped up. And but I think that we've been here the way that we've been here and the longest, helping establish that standard that we built here at Illinois to the rest of the squad is kind of been.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on it, Juice?
I'll just say, as older players, we know the standards, so just upholding the standards and just making sure, like, the new guys and the younger guys meet that standard. So just, like, bringing everybody along with us. So, like, just like Matt said, the leadership with me, him, Zay, James Crutes, since we've been playing in the Big Ten for a while, we could just, and we know the standard that Coach B's preaching, tough, smart, dependable, we could just bring everyone along with us and just keep on upholding the standard and just being there just so being there as building the relationship with all the players so we get closer. So yeah. Just stuff like that.
I would say the secondary has more, I mean, there's four new freshmen, four transfers, guys moving around positions, this and that. So there's this dynamic of you guys have been playing for years and know what you're doing versus a whole bunch of new guys in the room. Tell me about that dynamic and how it's been for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that transition's new. I think the first thing, which Coach Hawk really helped with, and Coach B does a great job, is just building the relationship. Because I think having a relationship one-on-one with a guy or even as a group, it's the foundation for being able to grow together on the field. And so ultimately, I think that was the biggest thing that we emphasized coming in, getting to know each other's names, hometown. That's something Coach Tank really had done a big job of, making sure we knew our teammates throughout the summer and even before that. But I think establishing kind of what you said is just the standard of play and the level of urgency that we want these guys to have, knowing that time is ticking. The camp, fall camp, is going to come here soon, and we just need to be at a level of excellence that we have been in the past years. And so I think getting them to that level of urgency is really been the biggest key.
Sure.
What? Go ahead.
I'll just say, like, we preach family at Illinois, so just, like, everyone coming in, like the new freshmen, the transfer, like I said, just building that relationship, like Matt said, getting to know their hometown, their first name, getting closer with them. We do like a couple events where like we get together and like we do like a little barbecue with the whole defense and stuff like that. So just getting to know those guys and just knowing that on their worst day we're there for them, and just same vice versa. Like on my worst day, I know I could count on them to be there for me. So just building that relationship and just knowing that they're part of a family. We love them. Don't matter the bad or the good, we still gonna love them. So just being there for each other, because if we the closer we are, the stronger we're gonna be during the season. So
as veterans, how is the transition to a new defense? Is it, yeah, I'll just let you, how would you describe the process of getting acclimated to it? Does it still feel new? Is it something you can easily go from one defense to another, maybe compared to how a quarterback and receivers and linemen have to learn a new offense? That, I'm guessing, is more complex, but I don't know. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think defense is defense at the end of the day. So, I mean, cover three is cover three, cover two is cover two. So I feel like a lot of things look the same. It's just all of the intricacies and the underlying things, terms, things of that sort that we all have to get realigned on, because all coaches coming from different places, us being here, we've used different terminology in the past. And so it's kind of like the small details that you really have to kind of hone into through that transition. And then ultimately, other than that, it's just like scheme, like getting used to playing the scheme and that in those positions and being with the guys around you and understanding. Yeah, I think it's really just the small things, understanding the terminology and the way that you communicate with your team is the biggest change for me.
So what does it take to be ready with that juice? Is it I'm looking through a binder or an iPad or whatever at night for hours on end, learning terminology, watching film? Is it just, you know, does it get explained once or twice and then you're like, oh, okay, I get it?
Well, the coaches do a great job of, like, getting us in there, like, every week. Or when I know when it was on break, we got in there like every Monday, every Tuesdays and Thursdays. So the coaches do a good job meeting with us, of going over the scheme, getting us to learn the scheme, like just going over the plays, what this means for like Matt Bailey, what this means for James Cruz, what this means for me, X, and then just all getting us on the same page to understand like what each other do and like why we're doing this. So they just have like the why we're doing this, and they show us like, they break down the defense basically when we meet and stuff. And I'll say there's no difference from the defense. Like Matt Bailey says, it's just the details, like the small details. Like some things are called different than what we used to do in the past. But, you know, to us, it's like, to everybody, it's all the same. It's just getting there and just taking it day by day to learn the defense. So, like, just just take it day by day. You don't want to get too overwhelmed and stuff like that with the defense. So.
Now, I have a question for both of you specifically, but I know you're probably going to be humble and not want to put it out there, so I'm going to ask it for the other one, okay? All right? So, Matthew, I'll start with Juice. Career interceptions for him, zero. Does that change this year?
You know, I think Juice is a great player, obviously. but I don't want to put anything on him that, you know, he has to feel like he has to live up to.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that he has on his goal board how many picks he wants to get or how many PBUs and stuff like that. And so I'm going to leave that to the season and let y'all see what he do this year. But I'm super excited. I think being on the field with Juice is like he brings a different energy. And so I'm super excited to play with him again this year.
Okay. Fair. Well played. Juice, if this defense is doing what it's supposed to do, is Matthew Bailey leading the team in tackles again?
Well, like he said, I don't want to put anything on Matthew Bailey. And I'm not trying to put that out there, but I know Matthew Bailey has been working hard. He's a great leader. I know when I came in, I look up to him. So he's been that older brother to me. And I just know, like, he always put his head down, take it day by day. And if we could get all 11 guys on the field to do what he's doing, then I don't want to be like Matt Bailey. So just see what he does. And at the end of the season, you guys will see for yourself. Like I said, he bring that energy out there. Like, I love playing with Matt Bailey. So that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, no, speaking of older brother, you both have birthdays coming up. You're going to be 22, Juice, in 2 days.
I'm a little bit older.
And you're going to be 22, Matthew, next week.
Yeah.
On August 4th.
Let's go on.
We reach out to Florida, man. Florida, we start school late in Florida, so it's...
Yeah, this is your fourth year.
Yes, sir.
And this is your fifth, right?
Yes.
So, but you're both going to turn 22 here within a calendar week.
It's crazy.
All right, I want to go back to the Citrus Bowl for a second because I've always wanted to ask you this question, Juice. So the famous dust-up, whatever, the sidelines got heated, the coaches got heated, you know, it's this famous story. You have this unique perspective on it because you were the player on the ground injured that led to Coach Bielma coming over there and led to the sidelines yapping at each other, and then it really got heated and everybody started to walk toward the middle and everything else. So I'm not trying to get any, like, inside scoop.
Yeah.
I'm curious just, like, from your perspective, I mean, you're injured. Like, you're just trying to, like, hey, man, you know, that tackle hurt kind of thing.
Yes, sir.
What was your awareness of what else was going on around you as you were there, like, on the field?
I think I had a concussion, so I couldn't tell what was going on.
Oh, jeez.
I had a concussion, so I couldn't really tell what was going on until I seen it the next day. But it really wasn't nothing to it. I just know my coach came over there to check on me, and that's what every coach would do. So he just came over there to check on me.
Uh-huh.
He told me that I was doing a good job in the game, and then that's the only last thing I remember because, like I said, I was still dizzy. So
were you aware of the heightened, like, it? I cannot remember a moment like that in a line of football game where, like, both benches came alive. The players were like, all right, maybe we just won't play football. Let's just meet it. Midfield here for a second, and we can settle it that way. Were you aware that all of that was going on?
No, sir.
No,
I said I came back out. Like,
yeah,
I came back out. I think in the fourth quarter, so I was still dizzy and trying to figure out what was going. Only thing I was worried about, I was looking for my helmet because I was trying to get back in the game.
Uh-huh. They probably weren't going to give you that helmet.
No, they hid my helmet from me. So,
now, what was your perspective in the moment?
Yeah,
I mean, it was after he got up and everybody knew he was at least okay that all of the stuff started to go down. So, what was your perspective?
The first thing that I heard was the crowd. I was kind of on the sidelines, like, dang, we just lost Juice. Like, what's going on? Da, 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 da. And then I just hear the crowd start to roar, and I like look. I look up at the Jumbotron, and I see Coach B in the other coach, and then I start seeing the players like rush up.
Yep.
And then the crowd got loud.
Yes.
Everybody, ooh.
Yes. I have told people, like, that moment is it's the most you had to be there moment for Illini football in the last 20 years.
Juice, you really should have been there.
Yes. It was, you know, the crowds are obviously backing their team, and there were people in the crowd like, hey, can we go over there? Like, you know, it was like, man, I hope they have everything separated right now because this is getting really red hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And for anybody who loves football, that's like that's the good stuff.
Yeah.
And then the fourth quarter played out exactly like that because neither team wanted to lose after a moment like that. So you came back out after you got checked out, no helmet.
Yes, sir.
And you just watched the rest from the sideline?
Yes, sir. I watched the rest.
That's great. That's great. Thanks. I've always wanted to ask you that because I know, you know, you're the guy right there in the middle of all this about to go down.
Well, you guys are about to go go at it again in camp, but from spring and whatever else you've seen, what's your impressions of the quarterback room? Obviously, Caden Hauser, your teammate, is here, and we'll be talking to him. But as a defender, having to play against him, what have you seen?
Caden Hauser is a great QB. You know, he reminds me, he's like actually like Luke. Like, they're both great leaders. Great guy, like, great dude to talk about. I know if something happened at practice, I could ask him, like, why the receiver ran this or why did he throw that? What was he looking at right there? So I could just go to him and just ask him, like, all these different type of questions. But, like I said, he's a great dude, great player, and excited to watch him work. So.
Yeah, same. I mean, when he first got on campus, the first thing I noticed was that he was a competitor. He's a gritty guy, and I kind of like that in a quarterback. You know, someone that you can trust and you can lean on to get you through the tough times. And so I think watching him through spring, he was awesome, obviously. I mean, like, there's so much that he has the potential to do. I think he's like, obviously we haven't gotten into the season yet, but I'm super excited for him and his opportunity being here. To show his face and to let the Atlanta Nation know who he is. I'm super excited for him.
Matt, I've always wanted to ask you about this. So, after your injury sophomore year and everything else, there have been springs and even summers, even last year, where they'll hold you out of a practice or two, just call it load management, whatever. Nobody wants to get the starting safety injured in a practice and this and that. Yeah. I have noticed when we get to see those practices, you don't like it very much.
No.
In fact, I can't remember many players who get as agitated. You know, sometimes at a practice that's going long, you're 2 hours in, they're doing 11 on 11, the threes are out there, and guys are just mingling on the, like, it's hot, we're out here, this and that. And I'll see you just like, that was this. You know, you're yelling to the third string safety. Like, it just bothers you that he made the wrong read. That type of thing.
Yeah.
Have you always been that guy? Like, was that you as a, you know, peewee football player when you're 7 years old? Like, tell me about that.
Yeah, I definitely hate any opportunity where I'm not able to be on the field, because I know that I can't be there for my team. But in the ways that I can, even when I'm not on the field, is by coaching them up. And so I think the coaches have put a big emphasis for me to be someone that's coaching them up and making sure I'm watching. And so they've definitely helped facilitate that. But I definitely had that on my own, like, in my heart, to help people. And if that's the only way that I can contribute to all spring ball by watching and coaching these guys up, then that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability as if I were on the field.
Yeah. Juicy shaking your head as you say this. You see him as that guy on the practice?
Yes, sir. Most definitely. When I was about to play my sophomore year, and I remember me and Matt Bailey was like, he was coaching me up on something because I guess I had messed up on a coverage, and I was going to play that year, and he knew, like, it was coming, and he was just preparing me for that moment. I think it was like during fall camp, and so he always been that guy. Like, if he sees something, he's gonna correct it, and I think everybody like listened to him because he wants you to be the best you, and he's not like yelling at you because he doesn't like you. He's just yelling at you because he wants you to be the best you, and putting the team first means you have to be the best you. So he just, like he said, he's upholding the standard. So he always been that way. So yeah.
Well, happy birthday, guys.
Oh, thank you.
2 days, thank Juice, you. On July 30th, August 4th. Matthew, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Are you going to have a joint party? Is there like a everybody in the secondary is invited? Big, don't answer that in case you're not inviting everybody.
Maybe in the future we'll have a conjoint party.
Yeah. In the future. We'll be in the meeting rooms.
Yeah, we'll be in fall camp.
Yeah. Best of luck. Congratulations on being here as well. Well done.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
You talk to their teammate, Caden Hauser, on Light the Eye when we come back. Media Days coverage here on Light the Eye from Chicago, the Hilton Towers, and Illinois quarterback Caton Hauser is here with us. Congratulations, Caton, on being selected to represent. You know, there's a lot of quarterbacks that show up, but not every team brings their quarterback, so that has to be a feather in the cap to be selected.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here. It's a really humbling experience, and thank you for guys having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it. How do you encapsulate what this transition has been over the last... When did you first get on campus? January?
Yeah, January. January. Yeah.
So we're going on 7 months here. How has that been?
It was a whirlwind at first. I wasn't really sure where I was going to end up, and kind of picked up and chose to go to Illinois. And I literally moved in within like a week and kind of just packed up my stuff and went. And then ever since then, it's just been great. Just meeting everybody in the facility, being around the coaches, being around the players. It's been a really great experience. I'm just so happy to be a part of Illinois and being living in Champaign.
Third school now. Does it feel like I know more what I need to do to be ready to go on September 3rd for that first snap of the year?
For sure. It was my fifth year playing. So I've had a ton of experience, different places, different conferences, back in the Big Ten. I kind of know what I need to do to get ready. I understand my process and really honed in on my routine and understanding what I need to do to get ready for a game. So I feel really confident in that aspect, yeah.
Is there, I don't know how, nothing replaces the game, right? Nothing will replace whatever you do and learn in game one, week one, and week two, et cetera. But is there something that sort of accelerates it all for you to get ready to that point?
Not really. I don't try to look too far into the season. Like right now, we're at media days. I want to be my feet are right here, and then we got camp coming up. So I just really want to focus on where I'm at right now and trying to get better, closer with the guys, building that chemistry, and getting ready for the season.
Back in 2023, when you were with Michigan State, I'm trying to think if I have my years right. You would have been in Champaign for that windy game. 22. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So what were your impressions, or what was your knowledge of Champaign before you, became here? Like, you just got there on that one, winds were like 40 miles an hour that day.
I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, I'm a freshman. I wasn't playing, but I'm traveling with the team. So it's a really cool experience to be able to travel with the team. And we're playing Illinois that week, and I'm like, okay, we're going to Champaign. I don't know where Champaign is. We get off the plane at Willard Airport, and I'm turning, and I'm like looking around. It's just like cornfields everywhere. I'm like, all right, where are we? And then roll to the stadium. It's this awesome stadium. We go out, and then it's like, okay, it's going to be one of those games where it's windy and cold. And I always tell the story, but our game plan that game was to not throw to Sidney Brown. And I remember that first play of the game, our quarterback throws a pick to Sidney Brown.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. Very first play.
Very first play. And then you got Spoon on the other side, so we're like, we're not throwing to the guy either. So ended up a crazy game, win, cold. I was just sitting there freezing on the sideline. But, that was my first impression of Champaign. Was I thought the stadium and the environment was really, really cool. I didn't really see much of the city, honestly. We went to the hotel and stayed in the hotel. But, yeah. I mean, the whole environment, the whole game was a really fun Big Ten game for me.
It's just always been funny to me that, you know, from your first, Champaign is known for wind, right?
Like
there's no mountains to block any of the winds. They're going to come across the prairie and they're going to scoot through that stadium. And that was, you know, probably the biggest wind game in the last 5 years. Did that, you know, quarterbacks have said before, hey man, it's hard to throw with this. You really got to learn, you know, first quarter and third quarter, I'm putting this much on the ball and opposite for the other quarter. So when you started conversations with the coaches and everything else, did any of that affect you, or were you just looking for the right fit for you?
Honestly, I think it's a good thing, because I think in the NFL, when you're traveling and playing different games, especially like later in the season when you play those cold weather games and windy games, like it just preps you for that moment. So if I ever have a chance to go to the NFL, like I think that would prepare me for the moment. So I actually take that as an advantage, like being able to play in those cold weather games, playing when it's windy. I think it's a really cool experience. I don't try to look too much into the wind, because I feel like I'm just have to go play. I'm not going to worry about it. I can't really change how I throw because of the wind. Like, it is what it is. But I'm still learning. We go and throw in the stadium a couple times, just kind of get used to it. And honestly, don't try to look too much into that. Just going to go play my play and not worry about it.
That scoreboard might have something to do with knocking down the wind now.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, hopefully it blocks it.
I saw that you organized your own mini camp, I guess, out in California with you and some of the receivers.
Yeah.
Is that typical?
You see some NFL guys do it. I thought it was an opportunity for me to do it because we had the whole month of May off. And I just asked the guys, like, hey, would you guys be interested in, like, I'm from California. I think it's a great place to go hang out for a break and go able to go train. I was like, would you guys be interested in coming out and, like, hanging out for 3 or 4 days and throwing a hang by the beach, and they were like, yeah, I'm in. So got a couple receivers, got Jake Renfro our center, and we kind of went out there for a couple days, just hanging on the beach, throwing, working out, and just kind of building that bond, because all these guys are new, and you only have so much time to build that chemistry with these guys. So I think it's really important to, especially the receivers, because I'm going to be throwing to them every game. So just building that chemistry with them, I think, is really important. But we had a great time, went out there, hung out, and I thought we really got closer as a unit in that time, and I really enjoy doing that.
And is that 100% your idea, your initiative? Do you have to say, hey, coach, I want to do this. Can I take these guys? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I've been meaning to do it. And then I brought it up to coach, and I was like, hey, would you think this is a good idea? And he was like, yeah. And then we kind of talked about, like, who I would bring and how it would be like and what their input and stuff like that. So it was definitely like a mutual thing where the coaches agreed that this would be a good decision. And I kind of planned it all out, talked to my parents and figured out how I'd do it. And it worked out. I thought it was great.
Football is such a timing, and, you know, he's got to know where you're going to drop that ball and precisely how it looks and you, how his break and his routes and all that. How long does it take? Is there a way you quantify number of repetitions with receivers before he's go, okay, I'm feeling it now?
It's all about trust. That's like the biggest thing. For me to be able to do my job, I got to know where the receivers are and knowing their body types, knowing how they're going to run their routes, where they're going to be out on the field. As long as we build that time and we take time to work through that through spring, through summer, and then just really doing it like a couple times a week until we get to the season, if I can go out there and know where they're going to be and trust where they're going to be, I feel like that's a moment where I'm like, okay, we'll be able to go play and go dominate.
And then Barry Lunny Jr., your offensive coordinator, how long does it take to get immersed in the offense and go, yeah, I'm fluent in this language now? Not in just the terminology, but I mean in a – I know what is trying to be accomplished here.
Yeah, I think it's towards like fall camp. I feel like spring, I got adjusted to the plays. It's the same plays, different names, so that's like changing the words of some things is different. And then understanding that and then going to like the finer details of certain routes and scheme and stuff like that. And then eventually when you get to fall camp, you kind of put it all together and you really understand what he's trying to accomplish. And I feel like now this is a time where I'm meeting with him and we're trying to really dial into the finer details of stuff and trying to get a full understanding of the offense. So it's getting close for sure.
So in the new way that college football works, someone like yourself, you have 1 year left, you had a great season in East Carolina. I think most people would even be discussing, like, this is probably somebody who's going to move up a level and you know, this type of thing. How did you approach it with 1 year remaining of, like, you're looking for best fit, you're looking for, I want to, you know, how can I showcase the best? Are you looking for, where's the offense I want to play in? What was your approach to the whole transfer portal season?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure kind of what path I wanted to go down. I think the most important part of me is I wanted to go win. I wanted to go play against really good competition, and I wanted to go win games. I want to be a part of a culture of like-minded people, people that think the same as me, that want to go win games and take a positive approach to playing, and then all the other stuff will take care of itself. Like me showcasing, that wasn't really a big deal to me. If we go play and go win and do well, like that'll take care of itself. So it wasn't about me like going and taking a step up. Like it wasn't about that. I just wanted to go play in really good competition in the Big Ten and go to a team with a coach like Coach B and Coach Lunny and coaches that really work to develop me and get me to be the best I can be. And then as long building the guys around me around the team. So yeah.
So you picked the Big Ten first, coming, you know, California to East Lansing. And then, you know, went to East Carolina. What was it that drew you back to the Big Ten? What is it about the football in the Big Ten that took you there initially and brought you back this year?
I just think the history is really cool. I think all, like, the trophy games are really cool. I think and just Illinois as a whole, it's an older school. And I just think when I came on a visit and saw everything and saw the history and met all the players and stuff, I think it just felt like a right fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And were you at all familiar with Barry Lunny or – you know, did you watch the bowl game of, you know, what the offense was able to do under Luke Altmaier, or how did you study that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's actually crazy to bring that up. So I haven't made my decision yet, and I was with my family in Lake Tahoe, and we were, like, up in a cabin, and we were, like, on New Year's watching the bowl game, and it was Illinois and another school I was making a decision with, and I was like, I'm going to just turn on the bowl game and see how they do, you know, against Tennessee, and I turned it on, I'm like, okay, like, I can see myself playing.
If Illinois
here.
Makes this field goal, I'm going to go there.
Yeah, it wasn't like that, but it was just like kind of interesting. Like, oh, let's see how they do or whatever. And then after that, I kind of had a feeling like I was going to go to Illinois. And after that, I made the call, and I was like, I want to go on a visit and go see it. And then on my visit, I committed. So it kind of it kind of gradually grew, and yeah, it worked out.
That's great. So one thing that, you know, maybe you saw by the film of the last drive, and you obviously watched it, but, you know, even the in-helmet communications and everything, that is the end of 3 years of a one quarterback with an offensive coordinator, and you can see just how the alignment is there. And obviously that's what you need now with Barry Lunny Jr., but do you take, hey, I want to do this, and here's how we need to approach this, or is it more, you know, I'm the new guy, and this is day one, so I understand the coach is the coach and the player is the player, but quarterback's unique. You've really got to be thinking together. Can you get there when you haven't played a game yet?
Yeah, we definitely can. And speaking of, like, Luke, too, watching him the past 3 years, it's like that's some big shoes to fill. Like, he had a great career here. He's one of the best quarterbacks in Illinois history. And being able to fill those shoes and having to change from Coach Lunny coaching him for 3 years and then coaching me now, like, we're different people, different players. So it's honestly good that we're able to go and talk and communicate and kind of figure out what I do best and kind of mold the offense to my strengths and what the other guys do around me. And you never really know until you go out and play a game, but we can simulate that stuff in practice and we can make it a game-like setting. And I even say sometimes Coach B even makes practice harder than the game sometimes. Like the stress and the pressure he puts on the quarterback during practice and some of the periods that we do, it's very simulated like a game. So I believe that meeting Coach Lunny, like, in the meeting room and going up to his office and speaking with him and then also displaying that on the field, I feel like we're growing to that part. We still have a lot to work on, a lot to grow on, a lot to build on, but I feel like we're growing towards that point where we're going to feel comfortable in the game.
But can you also look back? Yes, Luke obviously had a tremendous career here, but you look before that, what they did with the year with Tommy DeVito, and before that, the first year with Brandon Peters and Art Sutkowski. I mean, this coaching staff has done well with the one-year guys like yourself.
Yeah, there's no doubt that they're able to develop a quarterback, and that was so enticing to me because just seeing even what they did with Tommy DeVito in 1 year, that's something I'm like, okay, I got 1 year left. Like I can go and try to get a shot to go play in the NFL or something like that. And just talking with them and seeing their development, I think that's something that they take pride in, and that's something that encouraged me to go to Illinois.
Is there an aspect of your game that you feel is most unique to you or maybe stands out for you compared to other quarterbacks? I'm just spitballing here. My arm, my ability to read, my mobility, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like talking about myself much, but I think the one thing that separates me is my ability to get the ball to my hand. I feel like I'm very efficient in my progressions, my reads. I feel like I can get the ball out of my hand at a really fast and efficient pace. My anticipation on balls is something that I feel like I take pride in. That's something that separates me.
You know, I was listening to an interview yesterday, or not an interview, a discussion about Caleb Williams. And they said, I feel like he might be a touchdown, look touchdown first and then check down, where other quarterbacks are check down and then if it's their touchdown. Is that, I don't know if that was just two guys talking or if that's real in how a quarterback thinks one way or the other.
Yeah, I think there's not a right or wrong way how a quarterback thinks. I think everyone's different and plays a different style. I feel like with me, it's trying to find the open guy as quickly as I can. I'm not sitting there holding the ball for as long as I can, not trying to take a sack. I'm going through my reads. If I find an open guy, I'm going to throw it. If not, I'm going to try to make something happen, throw it away, or try to keep it ahead of the chains. I'm not going to try to run around and make some crazy plays and try to take a sack. Like I'm trying to be efficient with the ball and put it in the playmaker's hands.
You know, you mentioned Tommy DeVito year, and he talked that year that it was kind of the culmination of his career. Like he at Syracuse, he had injuries. He had gone, you know, back and forth with kind of a co-quarterback kind of thing, and then he was benched, and then he was the starter. But then this year, his fifth year was like, okay, everything now is coming together as I envisioned it. Do you see the same? Do you approach this season the same way?
I mean, it's easy to do that and look at that, but honestly, I'm trying not to look in the future and see like, okay, I'm looking at all my years and trying to put it together this year. I just put an unwanted stress and pressure on myself. I think I just take one foot forward and put it in front of the other and just trying to get better every single day and focus on the guys in the locker room and build that chemistry. I think the rest will take care of itself.
And how do you feel in the quarterback room with the other quarterbacks there and with Carson and with a freshman like Michael Clayton and everything else? Tell me how you guys have gelled.
We have a great room. It's only four of us in there, me, Carson, Michael, and our new guy, Dane. I think we're a really tight-knit group. We're all growing to get better every single day. We're competing, but it's not like any animosity or any bad feelings towards each other. I think it's a good, healthy competition throughout practice, and we're all trying to get better. And we're even hanging out outside of practice. We're going to Smith Burger and hanging out, getting some meals after practice. Like, I think it's a really tight group. I think we're really close, and I can't wait to get to fall camp and be with those guys and just get better every single day. And we're going to be in the building all day for like a month, so it's gonna be good hanging out with those guys and leaning on them.
Do you look forward to that in like a camp setting of like, you know, a lot of guys talk about that as you're a week out from camp, like, okay, just get me on the field, give me 14-hour days, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, for me, it's my fifth year, so I've already gone through it, and I'm like, okay, I love camp, but I'm ready to go play a game. It's funny because we got like these two freshmen that were like, okay, you guys ready for camp, and they have no idea what it's about to come.
Right,
so
right,
it's
right.
Just, it's gonna be funny being with them and having to work through that with them, and it's gonna be cool. Sure. I'm excited.
Caton, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know there's a lot. You've got experience under your belt, so this is not necessarily new, but there's a lot that comes at you in this position. So we really appreciate you spending some time with us, and we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I do have one more question.
Okay.
You're from California.
Yeah.
You mentioned Tahoe.
Okay.
I'm going to Tahoe next week.
Oh, wow.
With my entire family, which is, I have four kids, all grown. They have seven kids.
Oh, wow.
So I have seven grandkids. Tell me, here's what you got to do at Tahoe. Like, tell me we're going to be on the California side. We're
You're not south be, or north?
North.
Okay,
we're
going to
be
yeah.
just outside of Tahoe City is where we're staying. So up kind of by Truckee in that corner thing. Like that. So just give me your Tahoe sales pitch.
Man, I don't know. I mean, I only gone in the winter to go skiing, snowboarding.
Yeah,
So I go to South Lake, I go to Heavenly, I go to the ski resort.
Sure.
They have the tubing, all that stuff there. I haven't really gone in the summer that much, but uh-huh. I mean, the lake is beautiful. You go on the lake, get a boat or something like that. Like, that's the best time you'll have. So, I mean, yeah. I can't talk enough about Tahoe. It's a lot of fun.
Love it. We'll do it.
I can't remember. I was there a long time ago. One of the mountains there, you ski down one side, you're in Nevada. You ski the other side. It's
cut right in half. Yeah.
It might be Heavenly. So I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
That's Caton Hauser, Life Behind. Next up, we're going to talk to Brett Kielma or bring our conversation with him, but we wanted to drop this in ahead of time. Some of you follow what's going on at Media Day and have maybe even caught the social media chatter since then. But we just want to set this up for you if you missed it. Here's what Brett Bielema said from the main podium earlier today in talking. What was the question?
I don't remember the question because he ended it just by talking about Greg Sankey and everything else and mentioning how things went. Well,
that's right.
We'll play the clip.
I don't think it was prompted by a question.
Yeah.
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 He was just talking about the changing world and the things here. And, of course, there's always the Big Ten, SEC, what have you.
And there are people in this room right now who are here just to get that one quote and get it out there.
So Brett Bielema made a quote. Here it is. And we want to bring you this just so you have the context, because then we will talk to Brett Bielema about it. This is what sort of went viral, as things inevitably do at a media day.
Yes.
The growth of this league to get to where we are now. I spent a couple of years in the SEC, was with Slive, and then transitioned to Sankey. And I just think about it now, everybody's going to have, you know, opinions, and obviously they're going to draw the Big Ten, SEC, and you know, all that goes around about that. But to sit in the room with both of those guys, I think with Tony and the vision and experience that he has, and to be in the room where Sankey, I know he's got to protect the SEC and they kind of want to live in 2005 forever, but I think the forward thinking of where we are in college football is an awesome thing.
Stuart Mandel with The Athletic. Brett, you just said something earlier about the SEC wanting to live in 2005 forever. Can you just explain what you mean by that?
Well, I think I just made the headline, right? Well, I became a head coach in 2006, so I was going back before I was a head coach, purposely. And I think what I'm saying is, like, I went to the league, I went to the SEC, and it was a completely different league, in my opinion, than the one I was in the Big Ten prior. And just with the basically the two biggest things, the biggest components are the transfer portal and revenue share, or NIL, however you want to describe it. When those two elements came into college football, the whole world changed. I mean, it's overly obvious to say that, but I think anything to predate that is just a different time in college football. It just is. And it's also really hard. I said this point to someone earlier, you know, so back when I was in the Big Ten the first time, we were going through this renaming of our league. I think the eventual winner was the Leaders and Legends. I don't know how the hell we got there, but regardless, you know, I remember we were in these conversations, and I was with Coach Alvarez. He was obviously our AD, and we did a comparative study over 20 years, and I believe they looked at the last 50 years up to that point. And, of course, 50 years' time, Wisconsin wasn't anywhere in the mix. But in the last 20 years, when we took that data, the only other team that had won more games than Wisconsin was Ohio State. It wasn't Michigan. It wasn't Penn State. It wasn't Nebraska, who was coming in the league, obviously. But the four teams they all wanted to talk about and that they were worried about distributing evenly was Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Nebraska. And I'm pissed, right, because, like, I'm at Wisconsin, and I look at 20 years, and no one's really paying attention to that, right? And Coach just said to me very plainly, said, don't worry about things you can't control. You can't change people's 50 years of history in the way they think. I also had that revelation when I recruited a young man, Yelda Forholt. He was from Denmark. And Yelda was a foreign exchange student in Ohio. I offered him a scholarship, and then he went on a tour, and I was at Arkansas, and we hadn't won anything at that point. I was in my first or second year, and he went to visit us, but then he went and visited Alabama, Florida, Ohio State, Michigan, all these premier programs, and he came to Arkansas, in my opinion, because he wasn't blinded by the 50 years that he didn't know, or the 18 years he had been alive on this earth because he had been in Denmark. Right? Like, he wasn't blinded by the things that he had been told or learned. So I just kind of take that in a way that, like, it's a different world, man. The last 3 years, like, the quarterback I have now, we would not have gotten if the world was existed 5 years ago. I know that. Neither would my left tackle, my left guard, my center, and my right tackle wouldn't be here playing for me. Right? And you go around to every team, and the rosters have changed because of those two components, the transfer rule and revenue share. It's a different world. Anything beyond that is nonsense. That's where I'm coming from.
Like the Eye from Media Days in Chicago continues. The head coach of Illinois football is Brett Bielema, and he joins us now. Thank you so much, Coach. Welcome to another Media Day.
Thank you. Great to be here. I made the point on the big stage. I came here in 1991 as a player. Actually, in the same hotel. That would have been before The Fugitive was filmed. So, I met Kirk Herbstreit in line for the first time in my life. He was checking in at the hotel.
Really?
Yeah, for Ohio State at the same time.
And fun. They did not want you to speak as a player. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Well, no. They said nobody does. If you came in back then, it was just a big. I don't know if it was this room, but it was just a huge crowd of a mass of media. They were all seated. I remember that. But you stood up you sat down at a table with your head coach and you answered questions for like 15, 20 minutes, like whatever it was. And they told me, yeah, you never get any questions. And sure enough, first one. Now, back then, there was a rule that was just passed that was going to limit roster sizes and was going to limit number of walk-on opportunities. And I was a former walk-on, so they were kind of asking me out of that question.
Well, I don't know if you coach your players to say, hey, come to Media Day and make some headlines, but you've made a headline or two today speaking for them. And to me, all of a sudden I see it's kind of catching a little bit there on social media that you said the SEC is maybe still living in 2005. And to me, when you explained it, I felt like, well, that's nothing you haven't said before.
No.
At least to us around Illinois. All you're saying is you have different resources at your disposal now in this world of college football.
It's a completely different game. It truly to manage, coach, and build a roster. It's just a completely, like, literally this year when we signed Dane, we literally became one player over 50% of new players.
Dane Eisenmenger, you're talking about?
Yeah. And what's crazy to me about that is, you know, you said I've always had a roster of 120 players pretty much my entire career. I think at Wisconsin, maybe there was a year that we were down below that and then maybe at 118 or something. And then when I first got here, they were only at 110. We had to build it up. But 120 has always been the number, and you had 85 scholarship players and 35 non-scholarship. So when you would have a newcomer meeting in fall camp, which anybody that hasn't been to a fall camp, you have them come to newcomer meetings. I kind of go through extra meeting time with them. It's usually 15, 20, you know, maybe 25 people, right? I'm going to have 52 or 56, whatever it is, mm-hmm. in this meeting. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. But.
Yeah. The look, you know, I'm a fan. Like, I'm at media day, but I'm a fan. When you say stuff like that, I have a reaction of like, finally, someone is saying it. I'm online arguing with SEC fans. I'm not even that guy who's like, go Big Ten.
Right.
I'm on fan. Like, it's just different now. Like, trying to get people to understand, they're quoting, you know, number of NFL draft picks in the 2020 draft or whatever. I'm like, okay, that was 2020. Yeah. We are in a completely different world now. So it's, you know, yes, you had to poke the bear a little bit. Yeah. I'm sure you had fun doing that. But you explained it well, that this is really that kind of thing.
Robert, I honestly promise you, like, I did not go up there with that intent, right? Like, I was actually trying to build a bridge, you know?
Sure.
I think, you know, in my lifetime, I've been fortunate. I was in this seat as a head coach in this conference when Jim Delaney was here, and Jim was an incredibly talented commissioner, but he would just kind of come in and read you his decisions and then leave, right? And, like, there wasn't, like, motivation or leadership or anything. Like, Tony is an incredibly engaging leader, right? Like, Josh is an incredibly talented leader in a different way than a coach, as a AD. I was in the SEC when Slive retired and Sankey took over. I was literally one of the guys that said to the football group, like, how can we get Greg Sankey this job? He deserves this. He's good. And I think he's extremely talented. I was going down the road of, hey, these two guys together are about as good as you could hope to make this work in this world we're in college football. And then I just said it's one fun. little 2005
it,
comment.
It needs to be out there because that something has to jar the conversation differently because – you know, there's this whole SEC media days as the Eli Drinkwitz quotes of, oh, you know, well, it's just because the Big Ten doesn't play, the, you know, all these excuses. No, the whole thing has changed, and people need to understand.
Well, that quote is just misinformed, right? Like,
yep.
I was told that they were mad because when they made the decision to jump to 9 games, they didn't know that we didn't play another mandated, like, which we had for a long time.
Until 2024,
So I think the other one that people are just missing a boat on, like, you can't do math with this, right? Like, there are going to be 8 teams in the SEC that I guarantee are going to have one more loss.
Yes.
Because they're all playing each other.
Yes.
They got 9 games now instead of 8. So now half of those teams are going to – so is it going to be a team that everybody's excited about because they're – 12-0, and now they're maybe 11-1, or is it an 11-1 that's going to be 10-2, or is it a 10-2 that's now going to be 9-3, or an 8-4 that's going to be 7-5? Like, they're gonna, everybody's going to have one more loss.
Yes.
Like, you can't, like, it's like you can't even understand that comment unless you grasp what's being said. But
it is the one thing is guaranteed every year, the SEC and their 16 teams will go what 72 and 72 against each other.
100%.
There are 72 losses
one guarantee
to a whole bunch of teams, and it's really hard to spread that around.
Bold hot takes and predictions.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Look out. This year, the SEC will go 500. You heard it here first.
But obviously, the big storyline for your club is the new players and how much of it, as you said. And my question is how big of a deal is that? Is that it is a big storyline, but how big of a deal is it in what you want to do in this year?
Well, I think just a little thing, when you're deciding what to run offensively, defensively, and special teams, you have to take into account that you're going to have players that are in your program for the first time that are going to play significant roles. So you have to have a scheme that can be easily taught, easily learned, and easily played, right? So there's some complexity to that, but that's really in a simple way of looking at it, like to be able to take players that are coming in from maybe 3 or 4 years at other places and buy into what Illinois is and how we play is a really tough challenge. So we do more time on the field than ever before in my career. Not necessarily physically competitive practices, but walkthroughs, ASM&M. We do this thing called alignment shifts, motions and movements, and we do that as much as humanly possible because it gets them talking, walking, and speaking football with one another, reacting to how they align. So that's a really big deal. The second thing is our defense, because it is so uniquely different, we probably will go to look teams earlier in fall camp than ever before just because I don't want our offense preparing for a defense that they'll never see, right? Like, other than a practice, nobody else in our league will run this defense. So to get good at playing against this defense is kind of self-defeating on the offense side of the ball.
I heard you mention that, and it makes me want to clarify that a defense that is easy to bring in, easy to teach, I should say, doesn't mean it's easy to, simple no. or easy to decipher or scheme against.
No, as a matter of fact, our you know, so every year I meet with our players twice a year, once in January, once in June, right? And I brought in every player in June after they had been home during the month of May to do their 4 weeks of discretionary. And almost to a T, every defensive player talked about how their June installs were so much easier and simpler than they were during the spring, because they now heard it the second time and they can see the complexity of this defense isn't in the calls, it's in the way that it is seen. So they can group things together and learn it quicker the more they hear it. So that's something that's been really good for me. Because this fall now, it'll be the third time they go through, which will be even better.
The way that it's seen by the opponents?
Yep, yep.
So they're possibly deceived in what is whatever, yeah,
they're gonna
whatever
see,
cover you're in or something.
They're going to see Matt Bailey here, and opposite him is going to be Daniel Brown. And the next play, Daniel Brown could be standing behind Matt Bailey, right? And it's a different call, but they're going to do the same things, right? And it's just it's cool to see it unfold, but on the flip side of it, it's very hard for people that don't know the system to pick it up. If I had it to do all over again, when we were playing this defense, I would have brought in someone who knows this defense and taught our offense.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because they know the keys. You know, mm-hmm. like Roger Cooper, who I'm sure you've met and talked to, is an awesome, awesome football mind and coach, but he's got a great personality. And he always calls it the voodoo, right? Like he goes, we know the voodoo that people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do, right? And yeah. It's so true. Like now that I see it, like you truly have a different way of looking at it.
I know it's not out there yet, but do you feel like we had to not only do something different but innovate and maybe go where, you know, into creation mode of something that doesn't really exist?
No, I think this is driven out of two key factors. When I came into the league, the defense we were running was literally not being run very much by anybody else. I mean, there were a couple teams that were dabbling in three down and playing the style of play that we play, but we were kind of a unique entity. Last year, at the end of the year, there was probably 12, you could actually argue 13 teams of the 18 that were playing a version of our defense. It's just the way the defense had evolved. And then we became just like everybody else's prep, right? Like it was hard for, in the beginning, it was hard for them to get ready to play us in a short amount of time. Now it's just like, hey, this carryover from Minnesota and Indiana carries right into Illinois, right? And so this defense, there'll be zero carryover. I mean, there won't be anybody in our league that does anything similar or close to what we do defensively. It makes us a very unique prep in a short amount of time.
We talked to your quarterback a little bit ago, and he shared with us that he was with his family in Lake Tahoe over the New Year's holiday, and he happened to turn on the Music City Bowl with, as he said it, two teams he was considering heavily. And so it's a pretty good thing you won that game, huh, Coach?
Yeah.
Like he said he had a feeling watching that game that this was going to be the team for him in the offense.
You know, and we do a lot of things intentionally that probably the outside world doesn't know, right? But Pat Pearson, who I think the world is literally one of the most blessed social media content people I've ever been around, he came up to me before the bowl game. He said, hey, we would like to, you know, record the headset communication between Barry and your quarterback, right? And I'm like, okay, like end of year, there's not gonna be much carryover. I'm like, I have to get final approval on it, you know. And Pat said, Coach, this thing goes the right way, you'll love this, right? And I'm telling you, that's probably been one of the coolest things I've ever.
Yeah, it was.
Because I hear that all the time.
Sure.
Right? And Barry is just, okay, hey, this is what we're gonna do. Okay, well, Coach, you heard him asking me questions, right? And he knows what I'm gonna say because we rehearsed it so many times, but that, in a sense, is what gives me clarity a lot of times when I need it, right?
Like sure.
Barry and his understanding of what we are offensively and how he says it is very, very good for me. And I think to get to that point on defense, I knew there was going to have to be some transition.
And we got a few hints into that moment there of the Jordan Anderson 1 yard. You know, it's fourth and one.
Yeah.
You can kick it here. If they get 2 minutes left, what do we do? You know, if we don't get it, they can kneel it out.
Yep.
So what's the plan? And yeah, it was a great peek into how things go.
Yeah, when we took that drive, I you couldn't hear what I was saying.
Yeah.
Right? I guess, yeah, actually you could. I think you could say it because you heard me say some things. But I literally, when that drive started, I said, hey, I would like to take this clock to zero and kick it on the last play.
Yep.
I literally said that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's exactly what I kind of called, right? So that scenario you're talking about, on first down, I told Barry we were quattro. Right, so on first down, he knew that we had four downs. Now, we still had a decision to make when it was fourth and one if we wanted to kick a field goal or not, but that was a no-brainer for me.
And that social media piece showed the alignment between the coaching staff and your quarterback,
yeah.
right?
You see him nodding. Yeah.
yeah. So now the question is for Caten Hauser, and your track record shows with yeah. Tommy DeVito and others, but is you can't replace 3 years of experience, I would imagine, that you had with Luke Altmaier. Talent aside, can you microwave this at all with Caten Hauser? I was really impressed that he got some guys together, took them out to California, yeah. had a camp with them on his own initiative.
Yeah.
But is there anything that helps this process, even though you haven't had a snap yet?
You know, Scott, an obvious answer to that thing is that people don't – yes, I had 3 years of calling a game with Luke, so Luke is gone, but I'm not.
Yeah.
So all the things that we learned about calling a game with a quarterback in that moment – is now part of my coaching history, right? So, yes, you lose the player, but you don't lose the memory of what you did with him, right? And not every player, Caden's a completely different quarterback, mentally, physically, everything than Luke. Luke will get a little pissy now and then, right? But I think Caten, in my opinion, looks like he's just going to kind of be okay, right? Like he might grit his teeth at you a little bit, but he ain't gonna. You know, get feisty. Luke, you had to deal with your little moments with him, which was exactly what made
I understand that entirely.
Which makes it great. Like, yeah. that's part of what makes – but you had to learn that about him. And I would tell you, you know, 9 times out of 10, it was a great thing once you learned how to interpret it.
Coach.
We know you've got to get going, so we just wanted to thank you for taking some time. I know this is a crazy car wash for you today.
It's good, but I tell you, like, even like – I was getting off the elevator earlier this morning. Adam Zuckerberg was getting off, and I saw him, gave him a hug. And to me, these moments, these relationships are awesome, right? Like, we get to do it once a year. And I kind of have this day where I can kind of just say, okay, that's behind me now. I don't have to do anything until we have media day,
yep.
you know, the second week of camp. So appreciate what you guys do. I know that, you know, everybody that comes on your podcast enjoys that moment and have fun with it. So I appreciate what you guys do for us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good luck, Coach.
Thank you, Isla.
Thanks.
Hi, and I, Brett Bielema, here at Media Days in Chicago.
Do I get like a frequent flyer card? Like, is this my third visit
That's a
on
good
this
point.
Thing?
That's
I
a good point.
You should get some kind of, yes. you know, frequent flyer credits or something.
What's the Saturday Night Live thing? Once you're a 5-time
you
host,
a jacket.
Okay, yes,
yeah,
we'll get you something
there you go.
At the 5th appearance.
I need some we'll carrot out there.
We'll have a gift for you. yes.
We appreciate the what you offer us.
I mean, that's right.
I mean, I don't know about that. At this point, you know, like we're going on 3 dates. I think, you know, maybe
that's right.
this could be something. No.
Right.
Congratulations on, you know, here we are at another Media Days, and you've been to a few of these now, which means you've got some clout in the room, probably a little bit, and some experience here in the room. When you walk in, I see reporters want to make sure they get in with you and see what you're thinking about things.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any clout, but I've certainly been here a lot.
Yeah,
you know, it's this will be my I guess this is my 11th of these, which is really crazy to think about. And then I came to one as a player. Talk about something that has changed. This is a very different. Environment than the one that I experienced when I came as a junior in 1999. I reflect back on coming here for the first time and walking in the room and literally knowing virtually nobody. And now to be able to walk through the room and have a lot of familiar faces, a lot of friends here, people I've worked closely with for the last decade, it really is... hard to imagine just how quickly the time has gone and really humbled by the opportunity to still be here.
With some of the departures, where do you stand in the tenure now? Are you are you going to be the most tenured athletic director soon in the Big Ten?
Well, it depends on how you define it. like most things in life, it comes down to a definitional question. I will be the longest tenured Big Ten athletic director. The longest tenured athletic director in the Big Ten is Rob Mullins, who is at Oregon. But as Ward and Mike make their departures here over the next several months, then I will have been in the Big Ten room longer than anybody else, which is really hard to believe.
Yeah.
And I think maybe top 4 or 5 in the country in the autonomy 4.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So obviously, everything's about football today. I saw the announcement like an hour ago that season tickets are sold out once again. Talk about that growth of the fan base on Saturdays, because when you came in, even at your opening press conference, you talked about that, you held up your helmet, you talked about the environment from the 2000 Michigan game. So talk about what it's like to get that back in Memorial Stadium.
Just filled with so much gratitude to our fans. It has meant so much to me to see the way that they have responded, the way that they've supported this program. Not an ounce of surprise, because we have always known we have great fans. But to see the way that they're now showing up, the experience that they're having around our stadium hours before they come into the stadium, and then to know the environment that they're helping us create inside the stadium, is just one of the most rewarding things that has happened during the 10 years that I've been here, to watch the growth in our attendance, to see the four consecutive sellouts last year, to know that we're now operating at near capacity. It's just a remarkable change, and one that is so important if our program is going to continue to be on the trajectory that we have enjoyed over these last couple of years. Great teams play in full buildings, and there's no surprise that those two things go together. And as you're bringing recruits in, as you're showing your games on television, that environment matters, and it ultimately perpetuates itself into what the future of the program can be. And so just so indebted to our fans for being a part of this journey, and really rewarding to see so many of them coming out and experiencing the success of Illinois football in our current environment.
Yeah, it's a story that probably isn't out there as much. Like, the attendance in 2021, obviously you're coming off of COVID, people are hesitant to come back, but it was the lowest since, like, the 50s or whatever. You know, it was 35,000 fans a game. To go from 35 to 58 average last year is really remarkable. I mean, it's tops in the country as far as attendance gained over 4 years. So how do you build on that momentum? I mean, if there's 58K and the seats 60,600, there's not many more seats. So what's the next step with that?
I think it's just continuing to, A, make sure that as we get people in the building, we give them really great reasons to want to come back. And that ties into the in-game environment. It ties into the experience. And so you'll continue to see places where we're looking to evolve, where we're looking to be creative. Obviously, the video board has gotten a lot of attention. That's a central part of that strategy, is not only now can we use that board to create different moments in the game, but the other part that I didn't really appreciate enough probably when we were planning for that is the way it physically changes the building, and the way it really closes down that south end makes it, I think, a more intimate environment within the stadium. I'll be curious to see if it traps noise the way that I think it can. It'll probably have an impact on the wind. And so can we use that? Can we use the new lights? Can we use the Wi-Fi? Those are all things that maybe don't sound that exciting on a piece of paper, but when you put them into action in the building itself, I think can have a real meaningful difference on what that feels like for our fans. Those are just examples, and we're always looking for ways to add to that environment. Just this weekend, I had a chance to get up. My son's birthday was on Saturday. I took him to see the Savannah Bananas at Wrigley Field.
I was just there myself.
It was unbelievable the way that they keep people engaged from 2 hours before the game started until the very end. And there were a lot of things there. It makes me want to send our marketing staff to a Bananas game just to watch what they're doing and see if there are ideas that could be adapted to Illinois athletics, because it was a masterclass in how to engage with a fan base. And so, you know, we're always going to be creative and certainly never be too proud to steal some ideas from other places.
Well, if that happens, having just gone to it myself, we went on Sunday, everybody dances. So,
well, it'll be everybody minus one, because I won't be dancing, but there, you're right.
There is an inordinate amount of dancing at a Savannah Bananas game, I'll just say that.
By a lot of people who probably shouldn't be dancing, but they're a lot of fun to watch.
Absolutely. One more on the attendance, because I do, going back to, obviously winning is so important to, you know, the product on the field, but going back to, I believe it was 22, there was that late season push, knocking on the door of clinching a spot. in the Big Ten Championship. The stadium was not full. And it just was, I remember that going to, just because A happens doesn't mean B happened. There was a lot more that had to go into it to see where you are today. Because maybe it's the nature of the beast with football. It just, people don't just wake up and say, hey, let's go to a football game today. It's an event that people plan for.
It is, and I give so much credit to our staff. We've put in place a lot of different plans over the years to encourage people to come. We've really focused on our atmosphere. I believe strongly that we've got the best tailgating environment in the Big Ten. And I think a lot of our fans maybe who don't get out on the road and don't experience other places, I think they maybe don't appreciate the real estate that we have in such close proximity to our stadium. I think about Grange Grove. I think about Lot 31, Lot 42. You know, there's a lot of really fun things happening in those areas before the games. And then now you're able to add in bringing a Fox Big Noon kickoff to and put that into the mix twice last year. You're able to do some things with other in-game elements. I challenged our staff growing up. When we would travel as a family, my parents would always buy these travel guides. And they'd say, okay, we're going to New York City. We're going to go to the bookstore, buy a travel guide. Here are the things you got to do at New York. We'd do that every time we went anywhere. So I've challenged our staff. I said, what does the travel guide about an Illinois football game look like? Right? If you were to look at that and says, here are the six or eight things, if you're going to an Illinois football game that you have to do, you can't miss these six or eight things. And so... What's on the list already, and what are the things that we want to try out and potentially add to the list? And I think that's been a really productive way to think about it. We've made some changes, and we'll continue to try things, and we can't be too proud to axe those things that don't work and try something different. And that's a fun part of this process.
For the football season coming up, a unique spot here. This is going to be the first time in program history coming off two very successful seasons, and now you have a lot of a new roster that's coming from the portal. The way you build the roster is different than it was, you know, the last time Illinois had two back-to-back really successful seasons. So as you sit from your chair now looking at where things are at, how do you see it?
Well, I think our coaches have done a great job from – Coach Bielema to Coach Underwood to Coach Green on down the list. I think of adapting to the new environment. They are elite competitors, and they are going to, instead of spending a lot of time wringing their hands about what they wish would be, figuring out ways to make the best of what is. And that, I think, has been such a defining characteristic of our success over the last couple of years. Our coaches have proven to be highly adaptable, looking to find ways to take advantage of the system as it exists in that moment. And certainly the construction process of this year's football roster was no different. And as Coach and our staff set out to build this year's team, and it really is in this day and age, it's almost a year-to-year construction process. You're going to have some continuity. You're going to have some players who come in as freshmen and work their way through, especially in football. But we all recognize that you're going to need to fill holes on a year-to-year basis. The place you do that is in the transfer portal. And so, you know, as I've said in a number of different settings, this environment, and we can all sit here and take our shots and consider what's happening around college athletics, it's hard to argue it's been good for the University of Illinois. We have been a distinct beneficiary of the transfer portal, NIL, rev share. Our success has coincided with a lot of these changes becoming available, and I give a lot of credit to our coaches for the way that they have leaned into those opportunities.
I asked a question earlier of Juice Clark, because he was the player who was injured in the Citrus Bowl when Coach Bielema went out to talk to him, and there was some words sent his way from the South Carolina sideline and everything else. And then Matt Bailey shared where he was during that moment and what it felt like on the sideline as the intensity ratcheted up. As a former football player, and I've talked to a couple of former football players who were in the crowd that night were like, I was ready to go down there and just be part of the sideline energy. I just wanted to live it. Were you up in the booth? Were you or up in the box? Or were you down on the field by then? Like, where were you experiencing those moments in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I was up in the box at that point, but I went down quickly after that.
Yes. if you need me, I'm here, Coach.
Yeah, it was that was certainly memorable for me, as it was for all of our fans. And yeah, I mean, those are galvanizing moments for a program. You don't know when they're going to happen, mm-hmm. But they create stickiness. They have a memory to them. They get your players excited. They get your coaches united, and they give your fans something to point to and say, I remember that moment. And those, again, you can't script them. You don't know when exactly they're going to happen. But if our program continues on the trajectory that it is, and if Coach Bielema ultimately creates the legacy here that I know he's capable of, I think that's a moment that we will all point back to as being like, I remember that. That sure. was kind of a turning point for this program in terms of our confidence, uh-huh. our swagger, in the way that we were going to go about building things from that point forward.
As of last season, I'm curious of your moments. Again, as a former player, you know what it's like to run out of that tunnel and this and that. Have you had a specific moment of looking around a sold-out Memorial Stadium or a entrance to the field or a fourth quarter or a moment like that's like, man, this is it. Like, it's here. Like, we all talked about this for so long of having this environment back. Do you have any specific moments last season that come to mind?
The one that jumps out at me was probably the 5 or 10 minutes leading up to kickoff of the Ohio State game. Mm-hmm. You know, just, and obviously the game didn't go the way that we wanted it to, but standing on the sidelines, feeling the energy in that building, seeing it jammed from corner to corner, it was unlike anything I had experienced in that building since that Michigan game in 2000.
Yeah. Yep.
And just knowing the profile of that game, the spotlight that was on us, all of the pageantry and the choreography that went into creating that moment that culminated with kickoff was incredibly powerful. And so I'll remember that for a long time. I hope to be able to replace it with similar thoughts about future games that maybe end with a better score. But
sure.
But I think it certainly, for me, was reaffirming of what is possible with our fan base, with our program. And now we just have to continue to push for ways to make sure we're in a position to win those games.
Sure. Just over a month to this, a little more than a month to the start of the season. Everything on schedule with scoreboard and all the other things that are coming to Memorial Stadium or fan experience?
Yeah, everything's on schedule. I had a chance yesterday to be up in the press box, and I saw the board from that perspective for the first time. And it's big, and it, you know, you're basically going to be looking at it at eye level from up there. And and they had it on. You know, it's plugged in now. The power works. They're I don't think it's just a, you know, I don't think it's like the cord that you got there. But
switch it to HDMI 2.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
You got a Roku stick too.
Yeah. But our staff is working every day with that right now. I challenged them when we made the commitment to install that board that you don't go buy a Ferrari to drive 50 miles an hour on the highway. Like, we need to make sure that we're prepared to drive this car fast, and we want to make a big impact coming right out of the garage. And so they're having a lot of fun with it. We're excited about that. But everything's on schedule. The light standards are going up. It's been cool just to see. If you're anything like me, I kind of the old light standards just sort of blended into the building. You kind of stopped paying attention to them. They'd gotten pretty big and cumbersome over the years. We'd attach some satellite towers to them and some cell phone things. And these new ones are much more streamlined. They're thinner. They're smaller. It really is nice. It was cool. I'm guessing, Robert, you might have had the same thought just because I know the way you think about some of these things. But, you know, when the stadium was without lights, when it was the first time that it had been without light standards in who knows how many years, right? Yeah. 70, 80 years to kind of see it the way that it was originally intended and built without having lights on the towers was really pretty cool. I really thought that was a pretty powerful image, and I'm hopeful that we took some photographs of that to capture it, because I don't know when the next time is that'll happen.
You could sell off the individual lights. Robert would probably hang one in his house.
I would make the chandelier over the dining room table. Kidding me?
The new studio lighting.
That's right.
Anything else you think it's important for folks to know as we get ready for football season?
No, I think just how grateful we are for their continued support and engagement. Looking forward to another fantastic year. Soccer will be the first one out of the gate, as they always are. I think August 12th is their opener. And, of course, they had a great first year under Katie Holteen. Got off to the best start in program history and set a pretty high bar for herself. But she's been a fantastic addition to our staff. And, of course, volleyball will get rolling in Huff Hall. This will be Chris Thomas's 10th year, I think. Which is hard for me to believe.
Fall 17, I think, was his first year.
Yeah. So I think this would be, because he only, this will be my 11th year, and I only missed one year with Kevin Hambley. And so I think it's 10 for him. So looking forward to just getting everybody up and going again, and want our fans to continue to come out and support these student athletes, and looking forward to another great year.
Yeah, I should also congratulations on your contract extension. Yeah. And we were talking in one of the previous episodes when that news came out. You have notably asked your coaches to basically, you've worked non-competes into their ways to keep them either, you know, committed to Illinois if they're going to be in the Big Ten, or in the case of Brad Underwood, committed to Illinois, period. And you have a nine now. Can you go take, if you want to go be a custodian at Western Kentucky or something? Like, I don't know.
I could
where
do that. Yes.
The parameters.
I could.
Of, but you're not going to be an athletic director anywhere else, it seems,
according
to that contract.
No, I'm not.
And is that part of that? Like, hey, if I'm asking my coaches, I'm going to do the same thing?
Absolutely. Great. Yeah, there's no question. And I think in this day and age where there is such instability in college athletics, where things have become more transactional, it has been central to our strategy now for the last number of years to really push the opposite direction and try and it's not to have stability for stability's sake. You have to make sure you have the right people in the chairs, but once you get the right people in the chairs, then let's embrace the ability to do this together for a while and to build a long-term vision. And I've been incredibly grateful to our coaches who have been open to those conversations. Those are hard conversations to have. Those contracts are unusual in college athletics. And as the conversations around my situation started, it was important for me to be prepared to do that. And actually part of the story that maybe isn't as well known is I actually amended that part of my contract last fall. And so put that in place, just a minor adjustment, and then just kept that in the amendment as we work through this most recent revision. But there's nowhere else I want to be. I want to see how great we can make Illinois. I don't want to go start over and rebuild relationships and build a new team. And some people like the build process. I've loved the build process, but I've loved the build process for the place that I love the most. And so the chance to keep doing it together with the people that we put together is really special to me. I think we're at a really important moment where we have the opportunity to maintain this core group of leaders in our department for a number of years. And I think if we can do that, we can do some things that this program's never done before, and that really motivates me. And so I'm really indebted to our leadership at the university for their vote of confidence. It's not a vote of confidence just in me, but in all of those people who are connected to our program and the difference that they've made over these last years, and just really humbled by the chance to continue the work that we've started together.
And it means you can fill up your punch card here on Light the Eye.
No question.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I'm waiting for that fifth visit, the jacket.
Jacket. That's good. Maybe, oh, that place in Arthur isn't open anymore where Lou Henson used to get his jackets. We could get one of those. Yeah.
Then you'll really have arrived,
that,
Josh.
That yeah. may require more of an investment than you want to make. I'll take a windbreaker or anything you can find.
I have just one more question. The when you took your visit, what was it, January of 97? Is that when you...
My official visit to
yeah,
Illinois?
Yeah, your official visit to Illinois. It would have been December of 96, maybe?
You know what? We'd have to go back and look at the date, but it was Super Bowl weekend.
Okay. Okay.
Whatever that
Super
was.
Super Bowl weekend of 1997. Okay. When you took that, who was your host on that? Like, did you? Yeah. I know last year, it was just like you were assigned one official player as your host.
Mm-hmm.
Who was your host?
Matt Cushing. And Matt's one of the biggest reasons I came here.
Yeah. And so here, you're on that visit. Did you ever, Matt? I mean, just that visit set up the rest of your life. Like, if there's a sliding doors moment, a butterfly effect moment, it's that decision made that weekend that set up the rest of where you're going to go. You know, do you think about that? Like, wow, look at where we are going back to, hey, maybe I'll go play at Illinois.
I do. Yeah, I think about it a lot, actually. And what's really cool for me, sidebar, is Matt's daughter is now on our softball team. He's down on campus a lot, and he and I have stayed good friends over the years. But, yeah, I mean, that decision changed the rest of my life. Yeah. And that decision changes a lot of people's lives. Let's be honest about it. But it had probably a more direct impact on me just because of the work that I'm doing here now. It's pretty remarkable. And I think about now having the chance to do it for another 10 years. Most importantly for me, having a chance to raise our family in one place. You know, that just doesn't happen a lot in our business. Yeah. And to be able to take our kids all the way through school in the same school system, the same friends, same sports teams, you know, that's a thing that is just really rare. And so that means a lot to me. My parents, I'm an only child. My parents are still live in West Lafayette. They're able to, kind of the perfect distance, they're able to get back over and watch us play, be good active grandparents, and so it's, life's good. We never, you know, Brad always said this back, you know, when he first got here, you never take happiness for granted. We're in a good spot right now. We've got a great family situation. We've got a university that's being very supportive, it's just an honor to be able to do this, and hopefully we can keep finding a way to push the bar higher.
Well, thank you for visit three. So.
Yeah, thanks for number three.
Pleasure,
looking
guys.
Forward to four. One more. Game Day Run Club on the docket again?
On the docket again. You know, it's when I went through the stuff with my eyes in the spring, I didn't run for 2 months. I couldn't. And that was the longest I'd gone without running in 20 years. And so it's been a process. I'm back to running. I did 2 miles this morning. But I've got to kind of rebuild my stamina a little bit. So I'll still be able to get the whatever we run 4.4 miles in. I'm not too worried about that, but my pace may be down a little bit, and we'll be back at it. So it's become a nice tradition. I'm not going to lie, there's been a few Saturdays after some late Friday nights where I probably would have rolled back over and gone to sleep if I had the option, and it's created some accountability for me, which has been nice.
Well, I'll see you 15 minutes after you finish next time.
I'll be there.
All right.
I'll be there. Thanks,
guys. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Josh Whitman on Light Beyond. Thanks to all our guests for making time here on Light the Eye.
Congratulations to anyone who made it this far through a marathon episode.
I tip my cap to you. You know, you notably don't do the media thing as much. Am I
can button up when I need to button
I
up.
I know, you know.
I'm not like, all just long jumps and tripping into sand pits.
Yeah, you can actually do, you know, real content.
I can actually do my job. Yes, exactly.
I saw that Arizona State University is offering a new major. And this is 100% true. Mm-hmm. A new major in content creation.
Really?
Yeah. And so I thought of that, and then I was like, if we just do a cutaway right now to the long jump. You know, it's not, you know, this is serious work we're doing.
It is serious
work. No, but in all of it, I mean, maybe you tell me the thing that maybe stood out to me the most, and, you know, and ask Beal about it too. But just this defense is by design going to be something that is hard to prepare for because it hasn't been seen much.
Yeah.
It's a variant of variant whatever, and that they wanted to be able to easily plug players into when they come into from the portal.
Yep.
And so I just hadn't heard that quite that that idea around it. Like, oh, this is an in strategic. We got to a point where our defense was too known. We have to do something different.
Yeah. What we're building was we're easy to prep for. We became easy to prep for. Yeah. And that's true. I mean, it's part of it. Like, you got to switch it up. And it happens in the NFL. It happens everywhere. So, yeah, quite interesting. I think the thing that stuck out the most to me today was when Luke Fickell was up there. And he was giving the speech that we have heard Illini coaches give for 25 years at this
The time. B stands for and the A stands for.
That speech. No, it wasn't the OSCE speech. It was the our success equals, hold on, I'm going to get the it.
Knowledge.
Our success equals knowledge, energy, and effort.
Yeah, the E, the energy. The effort,
yes.
The brothers, the band of brothers.
He was giving the speech that Lovey used to give of, obviously, we're not happy with last year. Obviously, we're not happy with where we were at, but we feel good going into this season. It's just bizarre for me to sit here and listen to that and think, okay, the Illinois coach just got up and talked about 19-7 the last 2 years and beating these two SEC teams and most wins over 2 years in school history and all this. And the Wisconsin coaches, obviously, we're not where we want to be. Feel really good about the players we added in. Rah, rah, we can go, we're going to do this, here it comes. You know, it was just, it's bizarre to me to hear those two speeches of what Bielma said and what Luke Fickell said on the podium to be like, hey, that's us now. We're them and they're us. That was very, very, very telling to me today.
That brings Media Days 2026 for Illinois to a close once again. Thanks so much to our sponsor, the U of I Credit Union, for making all of this possible. Thanks as well to Logic Coworking. And thanks to you for listening, for viewing, for liking, for commenting, for subscribing, for encouraging, or for discouraging. Whatever it is, however you're engaging with us, we really do appreciate it. We'll be back in studio again next time when we once again light the eye.